Psychologists have noticed that we in the Western world are more worried, nervous, and depressed than previous eras. One of the reasons, luxury of too much choice. With so many options to choose from, many of us suffer from analysis paralysis. We pressure ourselves into making the perfect choice, as if in all circumstances there is only one good choice. But what about buying toilet paper? How many of us have stood in front of a shelf full of different kinds of toilet paper, trying to determine which option was the best bang for our buck? Toilet paper marketers have the strangest concept of math. These Charmin Super Mega rolls mean that you only need to buy 12 rolls to equal 72 of the regular rolls. But what about the double ply thick paper? They say that I can get 8 of these rolls to equal 32 of the regular rolls, but I will use less squares. Deciding on the best toilet paper for you, unless you have some type of brand preference, can be anxiety-inducing. Or maybe that's just me. The trendy grocery store chain Trader Joe's discovered that through market research, people feel conflicted about what to purchase when, for example, there are over 20 different brands of peanut butter that you could choose from. Trader Joe's reduced this number to 3 or 4. Fewer options actually limits customer anxiety. Only in a nation of abundance would multiple choices of peanut butter help to fuel our already anxious tendencies. The challenge is made most difficult when you are not choosing between a good choice and a bad choice, but multiple good options. When there isn't necessarily a wrong choice, how do we decide what is ours to do? Wouldn't it be wonderful if every decision came with a helpful tag labeled right or wrong, or a blaring road sign that said, do not enter, wrong way? It's like going to the paint store to pick up gray paint, only to be handed one of those color charts with dozens of little squares claiming to be gray. Would you like silver, charcoal, purple gray, battleship gray, blue gray, gray-green, slate gray, or Mount Vernon gray? Our choices in life are often unclear, tainted with gray shades rather than clearly and distinctly black and white. In the same vein, Paul's exhortation for the Philippians to think on things that are true, honorable, just, pure, pleasing, commendable, excellent, and worthy of praise may not seem particularly effective in discerning what is ours to do. What we have translated as think about in these verses, in Greek, a more specific word would be calculative. Something more like take account of or do an audit is more appropriate rather than an encouragement to simply consider and ponder these things. This list of virtues comes from common Greek ethics and civic responsibility vocabulary. And as the church in Philippi is surrounded by and steeped in Greco-Roman culture, Paul is imploring the Philippians to be wise and discerning when it comes to what is right and best. The church shouldn't simply baptize cultural values as Christian values, but carefully scrutinize ethical assumptions. They must guard their hearts from outside influence that might confuse right Christian living. This echoes Paul's prayer earlier in the letter, a hope that the Philippians' love might overflow more and more with knowledge and full insight to help them to determine what is best. As the Philippians gain more and more knowledge, they may find themselves becoming a divergent community, looking different than the culture around them. For Paul, there's an eschatological urgency to this request. Paul reminds the Philippians that the Lord is near. The nearness of Christ's return is a general assurance of God's coming deliverance from any suffering and injustice in the near future. Paul believes this return and final restoration is imminent. With the understanding that the dawn of Christ's reign was already beginning to lighten the horizon, the church had important discernment agency. There isn't time to defer responsibility, but living as followers of Christ calls for endurance and persistence even now. As long as Christ's return was coming soon, the church could continue to trudge through any sort of persecution, knowing that all would soon be made right. As the church now gathered millennia later, we may read Paul's words through the lens of deferred expectation. What was once driven by nearness seems more like a can kicked further and further down the road. What was originally motivated by urgency has become more or less neutralized. And with the luxury of time and space and the reality of a rapidly changing culture, discernment can feel overwhelming. What would God have us do? How do we go about testing the Spirit's direction? Quakers believe that there is a spark of God in every person. Therefore, a fragment of God's wisdom is present everywhere. The fullness of God's will can thus be best discerned in community, when everyone's wisdom blends together. Those of you that are in leadership or have already scanned through your bulletin this morning might be somewhat familiar with the words cottage meetings. In your bulletin, you'll see a list of dates, times, and locations where Pastor Tim and I will be leading informal discussions with the goal of getting to know you better as a church and beginning to dream about our future together. We will ask you to consider and answer questions related to your memories of the past, the gifts and assets you see in this church, and your wishes for the future of the Oakden Church of the Brethren. As we listen to you, we hope to identify those places where we have a common passion for ministry. These conversations will intentionally use appreciative inquiry type questions so as to keep us from getting stuck in complaints or past failures, in order to move into a future led by a sense of vocation, where the world's needs meet the church's passions. For Tim and I, we would love to have 100% participation. That's your challenge. So that we can glean more fully God's will, gathering together each person's fragment of wisdom. So just for fun, I Googled analysis paralysis and received over 32 million hits. Now that's ironic. In Dr. Seuss's book, Oh, the Places You'll Go, Seuss describes a useless, dangerous place called the waiting place. It's a place for people just waiting. Waiting for a train to go, or a bus to come, or a plane to go, or the mail to come, or the rain to go, or the phone to ring, or the snow to snow, or waiting around for a yes or a no, or waiting for their hair to grow. Everyone is just waiting. Seuss reminds us that this is not a place for you. In a world where information is easily accessible, where news is immediate and the world seems to have gotten smaller, it's easy to feel overwhelmed by the enormity of the world's problems. So we just keep waiting, as John Mayer sings, waiting on the world to change. Maybe you've felt like this as a church, waiting for your new pastors to arrive. After an extended period of time in the waiting place, if you truly don't want to get stuck there, our reaction is often to do the opposite. Just do something, anything, it doesn't matter what. In my ministry classes in seminary, we were taught a few acronyms that were helpful aids in understanding our role as leaders. The question, where is God in all this? was shortened to wigiat. Likewise, the question, what is really going on here, became where go, and what is mine to do became wimtad. I'm hoping I'm getting an A+. Yeah? The final question, what is mine to do, or wimtad, is a crucial one when deciding between various good options. When there are so many things that could be done, how do we know what should be done? How do we know what is ours to do? Wimtad is a little like deciding what to put in your suitcase for a trip. If you're like me, you start by packing for every single contingency. What if I decide that I want to wear orange, but the only colors I have packed are blue and green? What if there is a freak snowstorm in July? What if I have an allergic reaction to a bee sting and no longer fit perfectly into my clothes? Before long, the suitcase is overflowing, and some decisions need to be made if it's going to close. I can't bring my whole closet with me. So I have to determine what I need to bring that will truly meet my needs. Likewise, as the church, though tempted to each go our own way, spreading ourselves wide and thin, or to go nowhere at all because we can't decide what to pack, we may discover that if we indeed join one another in common passion, we can do so much more than we could ever do alone. We often interpret Paul's call to leave behind worry through an attitude of gracious prayer as a call to individual prayer, and that through such prayer, the petitioner will receive God's peace. But Paul actually says, let y'all's request be made known to God. The you there isn't singular, it's plural. Not to say that there isn't a time and place for individual petition and unique call, but it is in the common request made as a community that Paul promises God's peace that passes all understanding. Our comprehension of what is possible surpasses our own understanding when we have gathered the collective wisdom of the Spirit found together. As we make steps forward as a congregation, may we feel the spark of vision set forth by the Spirit, discerning in our collective wisdom and guarded by the Prince of Peace, Christ himself. And the peace of God will be with us. Amen.